Morning, everyone, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia. Currently, we are Zooming, as well as we have, we are now open on Sundays for in-person meetings as well. So we'll be doing both of them today. We want to thank everyone who does come into the lodge that we request a fragrance-free meeting. So for the benefit of those with sensitivities. And just some housekeeping chores in regards to Zoom. We've been very happy about being able to Zoom these just about 2 years worth of meetings. And it's been a good experience. We've been able to get people from other parts of the country, from Canada, from the Dominican Republic. So it's been a very nice time that we've been able to do this. But it's important to recall the declaration that we do maintain a sense of anonymity, that whenever you're speaking, to please address the chair and offer no crosstalk or side issues or personal anecdotes. And these traditions are designed to make everyone feel comfortable about the study of theosophy without any distractions at all of social differentiations or personal attributes. So let us all work to maintain these declared traditions. And if you are not sharing, please keep your microphone on mute. And if you have to get up and walk around, please stop your video, as the movements are distracting, especially if somebody is presenting a lecture or a forum. So we will start off with the declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. And this short but very powerful document does unite all of the ULTs around the world. You will always hear the same declaration presented, but each meeting is autonomous, that it can set its own topics, time, that sort of thing. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy, without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification and practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. So in order for the lodge here in Philadelphia at Theosophy Hall, in order for us to accomplish these goals put forth by our declaration, we do have 3 meetings a week. On Sundays as now, the doors open at 10:30. The meeting runs from 11 until 12. The Sunday classes do have a umbrella topic each month. And the one for April is the art and science of communication. And today will be the last in that series. And the title is Promulgating Spiritual Truths in Everyday Life. Next month, the umbrella topic is psychism and spirituality. And next Sunday's class is entitled Pitfalls of Pop Culture Spirituality. On Wednesday, we will continue in Mr. Judge's Ocean of Theosophy. We'll be starting chapter 15 on page 127. The meeting starts at 7:30 and runs until 8:45, and that is a totally Zoom class. And on Fridays, which is also a totally Zoom class, we are looking at Mr. Judge's The Heart Doctrine. And I do not have the reading, but it will come out in an invitation. And that meeting starts at 6:30 and runs until 7:30. We have 2 special meetings in this quarter. On May 8th, we have White Lotus Day, which commemorates H.P. Blavatsky and Theosophy. And then again on June 22nd, we have ULT Day, the United Lodge of Theosophists, its mission and future. The United Lodge of Theosophists is financially sustained entirely by voluntary contributions. Its activities depend similarly on voluntary offerings in time and work. All are invited to participate, but no obligation is imposed or implied. So today we have a forum, which is a shorter talk than a lecture. And afterwards, as always, we will have plenty of time for questions and discussion. And as we said, the title is Promulgating Spiritual Truths in Everyday Life. We want to start the class with a reading from the Heart Doctrine. It's on page 71, and it will set the tone for the class today. Those beings, meaning the elder brothers, have said that each member can aid the movement by explaining its fundamental doctrines, or at least by doing away with misconceptions, and that no single unit in the whole should be so ignorant as to suppose that he or she has a special karma of his own unconnected with the rest. Not a single good example in the theosophic life is lost, they say, but every one of us affects not only the immediate associates, but also projects into the great universal current an influence that has its weight in the destiny of the race. Some of these golden words are as follows. Let not the fruit of good karma be your motive, for your karma, good or bad, being one and the common property of all mankind, nothing good or bad can happen to you that is not shared by many others. Hence, if the motive be for yourself, is selfish and can only generate a double effect, good and bad, and will either nullify your good actions or turn them to some other man's profit. There is no happiness for one who is ever thinking of self and forgetting other selves. So we will now have our forum reading for today.
We begin this brief talk with a question for you to ponder. What is the charge, the job, the duty and purpose of the United Lodge?
I was just going to say.
What's the matter?
Oh, go.
Thankfully, that question is answered very clearly and expressed in its mission statement. It is to spread broadcast the teachings of theosophy as recorded in the writings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge. In short, it exists to preserve, present, promote, and practice the teachings of theosophy in the way they were originally given to the world. I guess you could say these are the four P's for any professional theosophist to hold fast and to follow. Preserve, present, promote, and practice. I'm sure that an entire class lesson and even more could be presented on each one of these by themselves. But for now, let's take a look at present, which actually couples with promote. Kind of like the doctrines of karma and reincarnation, to use a line from an old song, you can't have one without the other. One would think that before you or anyone could present or promote the declared purposes of theosophy, that they should and would be prepared by study and otherwise to help and teach others. HPB once wrote, "If anyone holds to Buddhist philosophy, let him say and do as Buddha said and did. If a man calls himself a Christian, let him follow the commandments of Christ, not the interpretation of the many dissenting priests and sects." The moral is, if anyone desires to be a theosophist, let him study theosophy as it was given by those who enunciated it, for one to accept as truth what any teacher chooses to tell him, without any means given him by which to verify the statements made, or without verifying for himself the facts alleged, is simply to believe on blind faith, as do so many others. We must free our minds from preconceptions and the attachments we need to discriminate truth in all we hear or read. In thought first, and that is not easy. For there are in the world many untrue thoughts, many foolish superstitions, and no one is enslaved by them can make progress. Therefore, you must not hold a thought just because every other person holds it, not because it has been believed for centuries, nor because it is written in some book which men think sacred. You must think of the matter for yourself and judge for yourself whether it is reasonable. Remember that though 1,000 men agree upon a subject, if they know nothing about that subject, their opinion is of no value. He who would walk upon the path must learn to think for himself, for superstition is one of the greatest evils in the world, one of the feathers which you must utterly free yourself. Obviously, you must know in your heart and mind that whatever you pass on is true, As an example, you are with a couple of friends and someone remarks that they will pray for another. Would you take this opportunity to express to them the theosophical point of view on prayer? A master of wisdom has said, it is not enough that you should set the example of a pure, virtuous life and a tolerant spirit. This is but negative goodness, and for chelaship will never do. You should learn that you may teach, acquire spiritual knowledge and strength that the weak may lean upon you, and the sorrowing victims of ignorance may learn from you the cause and remedy of their pain. The extent to which you are able to engage in such active life, to that extent, we receive help and guidance from those who are our elder brothers, masters and saviors of great orphan humanity. If one were to say you have your belief and I have my belief, or we each have our own belief, our own views, we would refrain from criticism. But to replace belief or views in such statements with truth is quite another matter and much more serious. There would also be no problem if the phrase were, we each have our own concepts or ideas about truth. No, we do not each have our own truth, although we do have certain of our own beliefs, views, ideas, and concepts of what is truth. But truth itself exists and is one. There is only the truth, not my truth, your truth, her truth, or his truth. One of the most ancient scriptures known to man is the Rig Veda of Hinduism, which famously declares that truth is one. Keep in mind the motto of the ULT, there is no religion higher than truth. Are you as a theosophist ready to broadcast the truths in the teachings? Have you ever thought about your reply to someone's comment as to why God lets war, famine, disease, floods, crime, etc., occur? Perhaps you have even asked this of yourself. Maybe you have even practiced the response you would have. I know we have. Tenzin Gyatso, the 14th and current Dalai Lama, tells this story. Formerly in Tibet, there was a famous Lama called Drom. One day, Drom saw a man walking around a liquidary. Walking around a liquidary is good, he said. Practice is even better. The man thought, then reading a holy book would be good. And he did so. And one day while he was reading, Drom saw him and said, reading a holy book is good. Practice is better. The man thought, this also does not seem to be sufficient. Now, if I do some meditation, that would certainly be practice. Drom saw him in meditation and said, meditation is good practice. Is even better. The man was amazed and asked, how does one practice? Drom answered, do not be attached to this life. Cause your mind to become the practices. Drom said this because practices depends on thoughts. And from Mr. Judge in London at the close of the European Theosophical Society Convention in July of 1892, we have these words. The society is a small germ of a nucleus, for a real outer brotherhood. If we work aright, this day must come when we shall have accomplished our aim and formed the nucleus. If we had 500 members in this society, loving one another with true hearts, not criticizing nor condemning, and all bent on one aim with one belief, we could sweep the whole world with our thoughts. And this is our work in the future, the work traced out for us by those masters in whom so many of us firmly believe. If we only have patience, what a glorious, wide, and noble prospect opens up before us. If we believe in our message and in our mission, we ought never to tire of telling people that which they can understand. They need the help of theosophy, for they are wandering very close to the marshes of materialism. They must have a true ethic, a right philosophy. Tell them of our great doctrines of karma and reincarnation. Tell of these with confidence, unshaken by opinions of others, and that confidence of yours will beget confidence in those that are listening. You cannot scientifically prove everything, but if you are sure, as so many of us are, that we are immortal pilgrims, then tell them plainly and practically how they have been here before in other bodies, and will be here again to suffer or enjoy, just as they may have decided in their other lives. And they will see the credibility in your statements. They will soon come to that belief, because these laws are facts in nature, facts in their own experience. We should do as Buddha taught his disciples: practice, promulgate, and illustrate our doctrines. Let us then acquire the art of practical exposition of ethics based on our mission and our objectives, our three propositions, and enforced by the fact of universal brotherhood. Topic once again for today's consideration is promulgating spiritual truths in everyday life.
So we can tell then that this idea of promulgating spiritual truths is not as simple as it seems. We did want to point out that the Declaration itself actually discusses this idea of promulgation of truths. it does say about the work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy. So we're looking at this idea then of this is the goal of this promulgating. And we're not looking at standing on the corner and handing out tracts. We're not missionaries going over to other countries and trying to convert people. We are trying to show it by example. And as was said in the talk, we're looking at this idea of correcting people's ideas. And hopefully, depending upon the way people are doing it, because we don't want to get people on the defensive by telling them that what they're doing is wrong. So this is a very interesting topic. It's a little more complicated than one would actually think. So if anybody has any comments, we can certainly have discussion, questions, answers. Oh, and one thing, the way our computer is set up here, I only get to see 6 frames. So if somebody has their hand up for a while and isn't being called upon, please just somebody tell me this, or the person say, well, I've had my hand up. Is anybody's hand up that isn't getting called on?
SL?
SL.
The class begin with a reading from the Heart Doctrine that our karma is interdependent and with others. And so there seems to be 2 ways in which we learn how to promulgate. One is through study, but the other is through questioning. We can't stop questioning, well, what do I believe? And when I'm presented a theosophical idea, what do I think about it? Is it true? And this practice, in practicing this questioning, we find within ourselves the very means by which we can communicate with others. So somebody is going to say something, just as we might think it, and we can communicate the idea by questioning, well, why do you think that way? Or the example was brought out about prayer. You could say, well, do you think it's better to pray for somebody or to actually do something to help somebody? So by this process of questioning, we get people as ourselves to think and reevaluate and reassess what is the best thing to do.
So knowledge then is an important idea, because if we're not sure, if we haven't studied, if we don't really know the answer or how to approach that comment, we could actually do more harm than good. So it is an important thing that we study and that we take these ideas inwardly so that we can feel that we know the truth. And that is an interesting idea too. It says that title is Promulgating Spiritual Truths. Well, what are those spiritual truths? Well, we know there are 2 different kinds of truths. There's relative, which can change from day to day, year to year, century to century. And then there's the real truths, which seem to be around for eons. And we know that the theosophical ideas, like going back to Pythagoras, we know that these ideas are not new, that they have been around for eons. And no matter what goes on in the world, these truths remain the same. So the reading of the theosophical books is certainly one way to establish in our own minds what is real truth. So any other comments on this about what is real truth and how do we put it forth?
MDW has his hand up.
MDW?
Yes. It said in the talk that many of us, or not, if not all of us, have really preconceived ideas of what the truth is. And you're mentioning study, you know, to clear away the cobwebs out of our mind. But is there something else that we have to do? I mean, simply by study, we gain some understanding, but it seems if we don't have a conviction of that, which we've come to realize, and we've chased away all our preconceived ideas, which are many, what do we have to do to be able to stand clear-headed and willing to accept and ready to accept the truth as we find it?
Well, we think one thing is meditating on these truths. We have quite a few, books, especially The Voice of the Silence and the Bhagavad Gita, that can be read on a daily basis. And by studying these and like the Ocean of Theosophy, the Key to Theosophy, those books, and if we meditate on them, that way they become more of our psyche, and that we are more confident to explain it. And that example that was given in the talk, if somebody says, "I'll pray for you," we would be more comfortable in explaining the theosophical idea of that.
What is that? Yes. What is the theosophical idea behind?
Oh, we lost your...
What is the theosophical idea behind if someone says, "I'll pray for you"?
Well, there's always that idea of the Socratic method, is that turning back onto that person a question. And as was suggested already, maybe suggesting, rather than praying for somebody, doing something active, like if a person just had a death in the family and you say to them, "Well, I'll pray for you," maybe just suggest, well, maybe you could take a casserole over to the family in addition to whatever it is you want to do. But doing something active could be of help, at least in that situation. JCS?
Yeah, it would help to look at The Key of Theosophy by H.P. Blavatsky. There's a whole section on will prayer, the theosophical concept of meditating, affirming within, affirming a vow to do a practice, to embody spiritual truth, and refreshing that in our minds gives us some rich sources, so that if we hear somebody say, "I'll pray for you," we can do a couple of things. We can say to the individual, "You know, as a child, I was taught something similar. I have read that," and allude to the will prayer concepts that are in the key. That might be very, very helpful.
Thank you for the explanation. It looks like there's a chat. Oh, sorry. Besides karma and reincarnation, what other truths should we promulgate?
SL? Suppose we hear this question, and it relates to the chat. Is there right or wrong? Is there a right or wrong way? Or is morality just relative to the end in view? Is morality just sentimental or self-serving? There's no real right or wrong, or moral way. We hear that complaint or question from somebody. How do we answer it? How do we take that as an opportunity to talk about, for example, karma?
So the idea of morality is definitely one of those truths that need to be put forth. And in regards to the idea of morality and karma, being able to make a decision in regards to, say we, you know, we're behind somebody on the street and we see that they drop their wallet or their credit card. I mean, we could just pick up the wallet and look and see if there's any money in it and be on our way. But we meet karmically, though, that's a choice that we have made to just walk off with this person's money. And I mean, morally, is that right or wrong? No, it's not right. But making the wrong choices when it comes to morality, and in regards to morality, a lot of times morality depends upon somebody, where somebody lives, what their background is, their culture. So much of morality is outwardly based. So we need to turn that inward and make those decisions as to what is right and wrong. And it definitely comes down to a person's choice as to what is right and what is wrong. MDW?
Yes. Well, we think it's very simple. We've all heard this. Do unto others as you would have done unto you. You know, that's morality. You know, that's how we can best evaluate what morality is, because we have to examine ourselves to understand what is right.
That idea of do unto others is that would definitely make it an easier decision to make, because if we don't want it done to us, then we definitely do not want it, you know, done at all. If we don't want it done to us, that makes that decision clear. But then we also have to look at the motive that we're using. That the motive has to be for the higher good of all, not just for us. JCS?
And that leads us back to the chat. You know, in addition to the basic proposition of karma and reincarnation, we also have the spiritual truth of the oneness, the source of all spirit being one, and the proposition also that all spirit is becoming through the growth of the soul. So those two affiliated viewpoints of eternal truth are as important, if not more important, than just the bare karma and reincarnation.
Yes, the idea, and that is something that we can always put forth to how to answer a question, is that we are all connected. So in this idea of morality, when we're looking at especially the state of the world today, when we're thinking about, is this wrong? Is what is being done, is that correct or not? But we have to look at it from this idea of the oneness at all, because if we're not being, if we're not looking at the spiritual ideas that each person is a ray of the divine, that we're all connected, and that what is done to one person will affect us all. So that is definitely one of the big truths that can be discussed with people when we're looking at this idea of what is going on in today's world. MDW?
Well, that brings us back to that idea of what is the ultimate truth. And we think you mentioned it, but there's a little children's verse that we are told to teach ourselves and our children is children of light, as you go forth into the world, seek to do gentle service to all that live. And it really comes against the grain of our material society, because we are these beings of light and of knowledge and of divinity, and all that lies within us. And we are just enamored by the physical world, but it is only temporary and fleeting. Mm-hmm. The light is forever.
Yes, the light is within us all, and it's up to each individual as to how we're going to express that. And we have to be able to look at the world and know that even though we may not be able to affect a change globally, we talk about thinking globally, acting locally, and that is an idea of putting these ideas into action, that we can help one person, we can help our neighbor, even being nice. We always say this in meetings, is that even being nice to a cashier, opening up a door, helping somebody who's using a walker get up a step. There are so many little things that can be done to help affect a change. JCS, were you going to say something?
No, but SL had his hand up just a little bit ago.
Thank you. SL?
Yes, considering the chat and the last few comments, another question we may hear from time to time from people is, you know, I've just lost all purpose for living. I don't really feel there's any purpose to my life. In fact, it's enough for me just to survive day to day and, you know, acquire whatever I can for myself, because, you know, it's a dog-eat-dog world out there. It's a jungle, and I just got to survive and do what I have to do to get myself some pleasure. There's nothing more than that I can see. What do we say to that? If we say anything,
we can tell them that they can still make choices to make their lives better. We can suggest that they talk with somebody, whether it be a professional person or a neighbor, a family friend. But we always have choices that can assist our well-being. And it's definitely hard, especially in today's age with the, you know, the economy and COVID, and there's just so much that people are being stressed about. So it's a matter of trying to let them know that they can affect a change in their lives. JCS?
Yeah, what's really important when we come upon someone who's so suffering and so turned around, to establish oneness. So when you affirm to the other, I can see or I can feel why it is you may have come to that point of view, but what has helped me in the past is to realize, to make real, the fact that I can stand apart from all this suffering and all this misguts, and I can come to a different point of view that I can choose and I can energize and I can help other people with. So you can affirm their chosen reality at the same time that you transmute it and offer an alternative. Mm-hmm. And that way it's non-confrontational. You're not setting fire to the other person's desires or deepening their despondency, but rather you're offering a way out that they can mm-hmm. choose, because they are soul. They are the perceiver. There's also a chat.
Yep, we just wanted to make a quick comment. The fact, one of the worst things that anybody can do is to tell somebody, oh, you shouldn't feel that way.
Yeah.
Because that totally negates their feelings, totally shuts them down. They are not going to want to talk to you at that point. So validating their feelings is an extremely important part when somebody comes to you with these type of questions and concerns. So let us look at this chat if we can. Here we go. If we talk to people about theosophical truths and they call us crazy or brainwashed, how should we react? Okay.
I'll have his hand up.
SL?
Well, we probably did something to deserve it. For one way, action and reaction. But, you know, there's the story of the parable of the sower of seeds. And the individual goes around and they plant seeds everywhere. Well, not all those seeds take root. Sometimes the conditions, the ground's not right. And we understand in Egypt, in their archaeological expedition, they found seeds that were hundreds and hundreds and over 1,000 years old. And yet they still had the potential, when put in the right environment, to sprout again. And that's the way it is, ideas. If you talk with somebody about theosophical truths in the right way, in the right manner, and you get that reaction, you might consider how you said it, but at least you've done your part. You've promulgated, you've planted the seed. And, you know, it just may not be that person's time to consider it, but the seed's been planted. They can't forget it. The fact that they reacted so definitely by saying you're crazy or brainwashed means it resonated. It had an effect on them. It struck them in a way that it was profound. They had to react. So it's there. It's an impression. And it may come out later at another time. So,
and one of the things that we have to be aware of is not to take it personally, not to react in a negative way when somebody says that to us, but just react very calmly and just say, well, this is what I believe. And you don't have to believe the same thing. Maybe we can have a dialogue here and look at the differences between the two. But just not reacting in a hurtful, that we are being hurt, would definitely save some, you know, time and effort. And hopefully that idea of the seed, better late than never. So, JCS.
And possibly in such conversations, avoiding the use of belief as a word is very, very important. So, you know, we don't try to retaliate, you know, and argue. That's not the point. The pure-hearted intent is to empower the other soul with the ability to question for themselves and to seek for themselves. to open their minds up, not to believe, not to accept dogma or our, quote, brainwashing, but rather to invite a whole different process of promulgation.
We have a comment here at Theosophy Hall.
Sure. When a student of Theosophy engages with someone else in any kind of a religious discussion, particularly if they are a follower of a particular religion, chances are there's a good chance that the student of Theosophy also knows a whole lot about that religion. And there's nothing simple about validating what they see as true along the lines of being the best person you can be, about using the principles of your religion to apply morality as you best see it. And, you know, along the lines of, so anybody, if anyone is using the teachings of their religion in the sense of, you know, being a better brother in service to all humanity, let it go. And in the process of that, yes, plant the seeds, the reincarnation, the karma, you know, who cares if they believe it? It doesn't matter. But when we walk away, if we walk away and they're left with a sense of unity and brotherhood and respect for the ideas that we're sharing, whether they particularly accept it or not, you've gotten somewhere with it, you know?
Yes, and the idea that those of us that study the writings, the theosophical writings, we do know quite a bit about other religions, so that if we can come up with common ideas, then that other person will say, wow, you know, like, I didn't realize that Theosophy also looks at this particular idea in the same way. So there are ways that if somebody comes forth with telling us that we're crazy or brainwashed, that we don't have to get we don't have to get defensive, that we can find common ground. We have a follow-up here at Theosophy Hall.
So one example of that is, assume that Theosophy can take a sentence out of whoever's religion, whatever religious scripture, and in that sentence, see it from a completely different perspective and share that perspective with the other. And if there's more truth in that perspective, mm-hmm. they're going to recognize it. So one person may read, be not deceived, God is not mocked, whatever you sow, you shall reap. One person might perceive that as, if I do the wrong thing, God's going to get it. But if it's presented more universally in the sense of karma, and everybody knows karma, that other person may not even have seen it as a statement of karma. But once they do, they'll never forget that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, presenting things in a different way can definitely plant a seed. MDW?
But isn't the reality of life that we live in this, I think it's called in the voice, this mansion of death, where suffering is all around us, and that this is the plight of humanity. And I think Buddha came along and said that, yes, there is, life is suffering. And he says that we need to examine why we suffer. And that question of why do I suffer, that seems to be what awakens most people to their higher nature. Does that seem logical?
There was a book that was out years ago, Why Bad Things Happen to Good People. And back in the day, we think that an awful lot of folks read that looking for the answer. And the answer wasn't there. And the only thing that answers that question, why is there suffering, is karma. But if somebody is suffering, that's not the way, oh, that's your karma. That's that's not going to work. It has to be put in a different way, so that if somebody is suffering, or that we're looking at all the suffering that's going on today, it is hard to understand. But students of Theosophy know how to at least resolve it in our own minds in regards to all the suffering that is going on, because we do have a firm footing on the idea of karma and reincarnation, which seems to definitely answer the question of why is there suffering. But it's, you know, to explain it to somebody who's in a bad way, who is in pain, definitely will need to have it put to them in a very compassionate, kind way. SL, and then Theosophy Hall.
We'll defer to Theosophy Hall.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Well, you know, all of us from time to time had our cycles of mental and or emotional anguish. And right, in the acute moment, the last thing you need to hear is advice of that sort. But it's that very kind of suffering that opens the mind, finally, somehow, eventually, to say, okay, things are not working here. What are some of the options? And then when the options come from a friend or a book falls off the shelf, so to speak, the person's more open to it. So there's a lot to be said for suffering if it opens one's mind and heart to new ideas.
Yes, a lot of people grow as a result of the suffering that they have been through and that they have worked on and have been able to overcome. And again, it comes back to their choices that they're making. And what we need to do is to support them in their journey, and if they ask for help, to give it to them. Somebody, we're getting some feedback. Okay. JCS, did you have your hand up?
No, SL does.
Okay, SL?
Yes, before it was mentioned that if someone's suffering, you don't want to say it's karma. But we understand what that word means. It means action and reaction. And you suffer accordingly to the attitude you bring to it. And that idea has been brought out already. So there's a place of inquiry to find out how they're suffering. Are they suffering mentally, emotionally, physically? And what's their attitude to it? Or can they choose, as was put out before, a different attitude? Can they choose some way to learn from it? So this is teaching karma. This is teaching action and reaction, cause and effect, making choices without actually using those words, but applying them practically in how we talk with people.
Yes, we can affect a change in people. But again, it all has to do with the way we put it. We put it to them. And we're just about done, but we wanted to end. The Heart Doctrine has two very good articles in it. And at some point in time in our study of the Heart Doctrine, we'll be going over them. Mr. Judge puts forth the idea, this is on page 79, Theosophical Study and Work. There is, and he's specifically referencing karma and reincarnation. There is a mysterious power in these doctrines of karma and reincarnation, which at last forces them upon the belief of those who take them up for study. It is due to the fact that the ego is itself the experiencer of rebirth and karma, and has within a clear recollection of both and rejoices, as it were, when it finds the lower mind taking them up for study. Each person is the concentration and result of karma and is compelled from within to believe. The ethics of theosophy, as enforced and illuminated by these twin doctrines, should therefore be the object of our search and promulgation. So he's basically saying that we have to prepare ourselves so that we can be better able to help and teach others. And our meeting is over.